Hello everybody. Anybody who has followed my videos will know that I expose the errors in the theory of carbon dioxide induced climate change. I do this by going back to first principles, using science which has been published in long-established textbooks. Anybody with access to, say, Rogers and Mayhew, or Hill and Peterson, or any other standard text on thermodynamics, would come to the same conclusions that I do. However, in anthropogenic climate change, we are not dealing with science, but with religion. Valid scientific principles, when invoked at all, are incorrectly applied to support a preconceived theory. This is called post hoc reasoning, which has no place in legitimate science. But it is good enough to perpetuate funding from politically motivated paymasters. After all, politicians generally have so much wool between their ears, it isn't difficult to pull some of it down over their eyes. I now turn my attention to another, more obviously religion-inspired proposition, and that is the flat earth. Like anthropogenic global warming, they sometimes employ valid scientific principles, but completely fail to apply them correctly to the real world. I've looked at some of the videos about Flat Earth which proliferate on BitChute. Most are laughable, but there are a few which try to use genuine science to support their proposition. The more respectable attempts start from the geometry of a spherical Earth and use the standard expression for the visible horizon. They then perform experiments and demonstrate that landmarks which ought to be beyond the horizon are in fact visible. And also, if they try a line of sight across a nominal horizontal surface, say the surface of a lake, we don't see the change in height expected of a spherical Earth. Like the climate alarmists, we are dealing with a highly blinkered approach, which deals with one single isolated effect, which is not actually the principal determinant of the phenomenon. Climate scientists put great store on phenomena which have second or third order effects, yet completely miss the dominant phenomenon. Filtering out a gnat to swallow a camel, to quote the good book. Right, having waded through the self-congratulatory, irritating prattle which characterize these videos, I managed to get the gist of the argument. From the geometry of a sphere, we deduce the distance to the horizon along the line of sight given by this expression. Here, the height z is small compared to the radius of the Earth, which of course is denoted r. So we usually drop the squared term. If you have ever tried to verify this formula by empirical measurement, You might be able to do it on the moon, but on the Earth, I can almost guarantee that you will fail. It will fail not because the Earth isn't round, but because it is a gross approximation to real observation conditions. Anybody who has had dealings with radar will be familiar with the four-thirds rule. That is, in order to take atmospheric refraction into account, it is common practice in radar calculations to use an Earth radius which is four-thirds that of the physical Earth radius. Consequently, this accommodates the fact that the radar can see further than the geometric horizon. Actually, so can optical paths. The reference I use for what follows is Merrill Skolnick's Introduction to Radar Systems. It's a very familiar text to anybody involved in the design or analysis of radar systems. Our main interest is in Chapter 12, the propagation of radar waves, and Section 12.4 deals with refraction, and that's where we pinch our formulas from. Skolnick gives this expression for the refractivity of the atmosphere. That refractivity, n is a refractive index, subtract 1 from it, because it is a very, 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 very near 1, so n minus 1 we call the refractivity. In Skolnick, the constant mu and nu are given numeric values, but that's not relevant to our discussion here. P is pressure, T absolute temperature, and E the partial pressure of the water vapor. If we look at the behavior of light or electromagnetic radiation in the atmosphere, we see that water vapor strongly influences the very long wave and low frequencies used on radar, but coming up to the optical band, it has no effect either on the attenuation or on the refraction. So when we're dealing with light, we drop the water vapor term. So we end up with an expression which depends only on the pressure and the temperature. And if the gas in the atmosphere obeys the ideal gas equation, that is simply the density here, rho, multiplied by the gas constant of the mixture. Now we could use this to calculate optical paths in the atmosphere, but it'll give us a two-point boundary value problem, which is a bit of a pig to solve. So what we do is, in this context, is a very limited scope, but illustrative of what we expect a refraction to do to light in the atmosphere. Also from Skolnick, we assume an Earth radius which is different from the physical Earth radius and construct our geometry so that our optical paths are straight lines within that region, and then we convert back to the true radius, and our optical paths are then curved. In this formula, K is the scale factor on the physical radius of the Earth, A is the Earth radius, and dndz is the rate of change of refractivity with height, which here we will take as a constant. So we derive this from our expression by differentiating our expression of refractivity. Remember this one. And we expect it in terms of densities, and we need the rate of change of density with height. Well, for the troposphere on the Earth, the density follows this type of polytropic relationship. Alpha here is called the temperature lapse rate. It's the rate at which the temperature varies with altitude, and m, the polytropic index, depends on the acceleration of gravity as well as the lapse rate and the gas constant of the mixture. So that gives us this big messy expression here. And as we're dealing near the surface, we'll take the height as zero, and that finally gives us this expression here. Okay, that's what we now use in the following calculations. So I'm bugging into a little naughty computer program, and we know that the temperature lapse rate can potentially vary locally between the extremes of 3.5 degrees per kilometer up to 9.8 degrees per kilometer. I've yet to find anywhere on the Earth where it reaches either of these extremes, but those are essentially thermodynamic limits on it. And we see that that can give us an increase in the visible horizon of 10 or 11%. So we do have a significant effect, so it shouldn't come as a great surprise, especially over water, that we actually can see things which are beyond the geometric horizon. Well, if we actually look at the optical paths, now this is for somebody standing 100 meters up looking out, using a lapse rate of 6.5 degrees per kilometer, we get errors even in this very benign model of about 4 meters from a straight line path. But the experiments that have been quoted, positions are used, or heights are found using GPS, which struck me as rather strange, because depending on the number of satellites you get, you can't trust your GPS measurement to better than about 8 metres, and worse in height. So I'm not too sure what they were trying to show. Anyhow, the bottom line is to try and measure the Earth's curvature by means of sight lines in the low troposphere of the Earth is a fool's errand. I can guarantee that you can prove anything. We have used a very simple model here, which is very basic behavior. The real world is much, much worse. The refractivity gradient isn't constant with height. An example we've all seen, when the ground's been very, very hot, you can get mirages, you can actually get reflections of the sky in the ground. If you measure those optical paths, you would conclude that we were inside a sphere. We haven't considered temperature inversions, by which the temperature increases rather than drops with height, because the formulas used are not appropriate. In radar, we can get atmospheric ducting, by which the beam can go on for way, 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 way beyond the horizon. Some, on occasions, nearly an eighth of the way round the earth. And there's a certain hubris in imagining that the atmosphere, in all respects, is fully understood, and that all meteorological phenomena which are possible have been met and explained. But in which ways is this similar to anthropogenic global warming? Well, the alarmists do indeed have much in common with the flat earthers. The theory is contrived to fit the narrative rather than flowing down from the science. The data is cherry-picked and fudged to fit the narrative, and anybody who points out these limitations is derided and insulted rather than countered. But the alarmists are worse. At least the flat earthers don't try to censor or suppress alternative views and theories. And I've yet to find one who insists that their opponents be put in jail. So, philosophically, AGW alarmists are on a par with flat earthers, except they are complete disgrace to science. Well, thank you very much for listening, and bye for now.